The following message, Elders and Deacons, was delivered to the adult Bible class of Emmanuel Reformed Baptist Church of SeaTac, Washington, on Sunday, December 11, 2016, by Pastor John Ruther of Covenant Baptist Church, Lumberton, New Jersey.
Well, as always, it's a wonderful joy for me to be here, to see all of your faces, and to spend this day with you. And I trust that God will bless our fellowship throughout the day, and that we can catch up with one another. And God has been good to me this year, and I'm thankful as the year draws to its end to say that God has been faithful to my family, to me, and to our church. And so I'm very thankful, as well as I'm sure you are, for the Lord's mercies this year. So this morning I'll take the opportunity to talk about a very practical subject, if I may, and I'm sure that you have an interest in this subject of church office bearers in the church. And like you, we are a small church, and at present I am the only office bearer in our church, a situation I've never had in all these years, 31 years. So I'm very much about this whole subject of building a leadership in our church and prayerfully work at it. And I'm happy to take this opportunity here to go through this hour and talk about these things with you. And you have an outline sheet. Obviously, we're putting off our study in the Psalms till next time, God willing, and interrupting that to look at this practical subject. So if you're a member of the church here, I would encourage you to think carefully through these things. And we should have time throughout the class. If you'd like to ask a question, feel free to do that. And even at the end, maybe have some discussion. And I may have some recommendations in this whole area. So I trust that the Lord will bless our time together and that it will be profitable and that you'll understand the role of elders and deacons as a result of this study just a little bit better. I'm sure you do already. So there are basically three parts to this study this morning. And the first part, as you see on the front of the page there, which I'll call the shared elements, between elders and deacons in the church, or what we might call teamwork. And I would also say at the outset that there are shared elements with regard to the Christian life as well. If you look at this list of things under the shared elements, where you see six things, these things should be true of every Christian. It's the same with the qualifications for office bearers in 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1. The characteristics that are set forth in those passages aren't for some elite group of men in the church. They're really for every Christian. It's just that when it comes to an office bearer, like an elder or deacon, the requirement is they must be there, and they must be there in with a level of maturity. But they're still all qualifications or all qualities that all Christians should strive for. So don't think of elders and deacons in the church as some separated type of group. So then the second part of our study will be brief, and that's at the bottom of the page. Just talk a little bit about the distinctions and the roles of elders and deacons, which I'm sure you are pretty well aware of, but we'll talk about it in specifics. And then on the back of the page is where you have the qualifications for elders and deacons separated out. I read a book some years ago in which the author had two columns. I mean, he just did it a little differently. He had the deacons on the left, the elders on the right, and he put the deacon qualifications first so you could see them, and then he expanded on the eldership. So there's different ways to do this. This is just the way I've chosen to do it. And I just worked on this week, so I may change it, but we'll come to that. But I think the benefit of doing this here is that you get a better feel for what you're looking for in the church, or in this particular church, when you think about elders and deacons. And I know you do that at a certain time of the year. You actually have, like as we do, an official time where you submit your thoughts in this regard. So we'll look at that, and we'll talk about that, and if you have questions, that will be fine. And then I'll try to summarize it, which I don't have the points written down, but I'll try to summarize all of that at the end, near the end. So So let's talk about the shared elements or the teamwork elements or even the sharing of these matters with all the church people, with the people of God. So elders and deacons possess a caring concern for the church. You see this in quite a number of verses in the New Testament. Turn to Philippians chapter 2, verses 19 through 29, where Paul is talking about Timothy. And although he's talking about Timothy, and Timothy was a pastor, it still highlights the need for elders and deacons and church members to really care about the church, have a caring concern for the church. It's like saying, you know, you as a member here at Emmanuel, you care for your church. Maybe you have concerns or maybe worry, because the word that Paul uses for concern is actually the Greek word that's translated in other places, worry. Like, don't be anxious or worry, as in Philippians chapter 4. But where he's talking about Timothy, won't read the whole section, but in verse 20, he says, I have no one else of kindred spirit who will genuinely be concerned for your welfare, for they all seek after their own interests, not those of Christ Jesus. But you know his proven worth, how he served, and so on. So this is a great passage to start with, I think, because it just shows that the church needs caring people. And if you're a member of this church, you need to really care about this church, and not just your church, this church, but the church at large, wherever you have opportunity to pray for it or to work with other churches. So, and as I said, the word for care is the Greek word for worry, like in the Sermon on the Mount. Don't be anxious for tomorrow. Don't worry about your life. So, you know, worry is a sin, and Paul talks about that sin in Romans, Philippians chapter 4. But, you know, if you're a parent and you worry about your children, is that a sin? Not necessarily. It's just it's a deep concern that we have for children, very much akin to what we call worry. So there's a fine line there. But Paul, notice what he said, they all seek after their own things. They all seek after their own interests. So Timothy's concern for the church was in contrast to people who just care about themselves. So another passage is 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 28, where you don't need to turn there, but Paul speaks there about the different trials that he's going through the ministry, and he says, and apart from this, or in addition to this, is the concern or the daily pressure upon me of concern for all the churches. And that's the same word, worry or anxiety. So Paul is concerned about all the churches. And I like the way he says it there, daily pressure. It's very much like a parent. It's the daily pressure. Colossians 2 and verse 1, remember Paul said, I want you to be aware of the great struggle that I have for your sake and for those who are at Laodicea. Paul was concerned for God's people. 1 Timothy 3, 5, in the list of qualifications, which are on the back of the paper here, Paul talks about that if a man can't manage his own household, how will he take care of the church of God? So there's the word care, or give attention, to care about, to be careful, and to show a caring concern. You remember the illustration of the sheep and the shepherd and the hireling in John chapter 10. Jesus makes a distinction between a true shepherd and a hireling, which is just somebody who does it as a job. It's just his job. He gets paid. So he's just more concerned about his paycheck than he is about the sheep. And so he says in John 10:13 that when the wolf comes, he flees because he's a hireling and he's not concerned about the sheep. Well, that's just his job. So he's willing to forsake that job and go get another job somewhere else. So church leaders have this mark in their service. Deacons manifest this in their ministry, which emphasizes service. So it's not that we need proof texts. It's just a natural connection of care for the church. Why does a deacon serve in the church? It's because he cares for the church. And if you just flip over real quickly to the list of qualifications, this might be a good place for me to make this comment or this observation. That even though you see some white spaces on the right side, you say, well, there are a lot more qualifications for elder than deacon. And even though you see white spaces there, it doesn't mean that the things on the left side don't apply on the right side. And there are certain things that are said, for example, of the deacon that like on my notes, I have an arrow drawn to the left. So, for example, let these first be tested if beyond reproach. Well, that's said of the deacon, but not the elder. But it's implied with regard to the elder. And so a caring concern for the church is also true of deacons. And again, as I stated, I'll restate it again. It's also true of every believer. If you love the Lord, and this is a challenge. This is the challenge of, I've found this to be a great challenge in pastoral ministry over the years, that many Christians separate their love for Christ and their love for the church. And there are lots of reasons for this, and they're not all, you know, they're not all good, solid biblical reasons. Some Christians have a Christ only way of thinking, in that they say, well, I obey Christ, but I don't obey any man, or they just sometimes minimize the church for their love for Christ. So we don't want to do that. We want to have a care for the church because it's His church. So the second thing is, in this over this summary of the shared aspects, is the idea of working hard, or the concept of working hard. Jesus spoke about kingdom work in Matthew 9:37 and 38 in terms of working. The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, beseech the Lord of the harvest to send forth laborers. So the kingdom requires workers. The church requires workers. And those are not just elders and deacons as workers, but of course Christians. Remember, I don't know the actual reference slips me right now, but I think it's Luke 10, maybe Luke 10, 16, I'm not sure, where it says man doesn't put his hand to the plow and then turn back. Remember that, what Jesus talked about? And that's a reference to the Christian life. So one of the things that we insist about the Christian life is that the Christian life is working for Jesus. Same idea with the yoke. Jesus says, take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and humble of heart, and you shall find rest for your souls. It's interesting that he uses the word rest there in the context of work. He doesn't say, take my blanket or take my pillow, because you shall find rest for your souls. But he says, take my yoke. And so a yoke implies work. So the Christian life is working with Jesus. So therefore, the Christian life is hard work for Jesus. And the work of elders and deacons is also work. John 4:37-38, I sent you to reap for that which you have not labored. 1 Corinthians 9:7, Paul compares the work of the eldership to the soldier, the farmer, the shepherd. Acts 20:35, Paul said, in everything I showed you that by working hard in this manner, you must help the weak and remember the words of the Lord Jesus. It is more blessed to give than to receive. That's a passage that applies to both elders and deacons and Christians. Working hard to help the weak. And remember, the principle that motivates this kind of hard work is it's more blessed to give than to receive. Paul talks about 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 10 about laboring hard, laboring even more than all of them. 1 Corinthians 16:16, that you also be in subjection to... Let's look at that one. 1 Corinthians 16:16. Start at verse 15. Now I urge you, brethren, you know the household of Stephanas, that they were the first fruits of Achaia, and that they have devoted themselves for ministry to the saints, that you also be in subjection to such men and to everyone who helps in the work and labors. Now, notice there's no mention here of elders or deacons, so it's a very general statement, which is important to have a general statement like this. But notice he's talking about, it's not an official subjection like Hebrews 13:17, submit to your elders and obey them, for they keep watch over your souls. But it's the idea of just recognizing the people who work, who are workers in the kingdom of God. And notice how he broadens it out to say such men, such specific people, like the household of Stephanas, and those who devote themselves to ministry. So those are the such men he's talking about in verse 15, those who devote themselves to ministry. And then notice how he adds a group, like in concentric circles, around that group, he says, everyone who helps in the work and labor. So that might be, that might envision just anything that anyone does in the church. Maybe you have a ministry, you know, maybe it's a small ministry of taking care of one particular thing in the church. Well, you would fit in around that, in that concentric circle. So I'm just trying to help us to broaden our view of this whole matter of elders and deacons and church members in their participation in the church. Of course, in Romans 16, you have a good example of this, the best example, and it is amazing, an amazing example. But Paul lists all these people, men and women, who have different levels of involvement in the life of the church and in official service, and also in like what we call non-official service, who are servants and working for the church. So that's the second point. They work hard. The third point is they possess a faith that sees heavenly things and masters earthly things. That's my own particular way of summarizing some of the particulars. If you turn over to the other side, it's a way of summarizing. Because remember that in this list that you have in 1 Timothy 3, Titus 1, this list is not exhaustive. And this is true of all lists. Any list you have in the New Testament, like there are different kinds of lists. You have lists of different sins that people commit, and they're just examples of the types of things. You have a list like the fruit of the Spirit, which is not an exhaustive list, because Paul at the end of that says, he talks about things such as these. Let me get that right. Let me quote that correctly here. Galatians 5. Yeah, Galatians 5:22. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Now here it is. Against such things. So such things. So it's not an exhaustive list. He could add more to that. As thorough as that list seems to be, he could add more to it. So that's the way lists are. So that's why it's helpful to put the list out on a sheet like this and look at it so that you see the details, but you also see the thrust of it, like the emphasis. So you try to summarize it in statements like this that I'm doing here, that when you look at these requirements in this area, which is about in the middle, a little beyond the middle, on the left side, you see for elders, manager of his own household, keeping his children, faithful, not rebellious children. And then on the right side, you see deacons, manager of his own children and household. It's essentially the same list on both sides. It's just that he didn't repeat himself. So when you look at all that and you say, well, what's he really getting at there? And this is what I think he's getting at. They possess a faith that sees heavenly. I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong category. It's the one up above. Holding forth the word to exhort and refute, and holding the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience. So they possess a faith that sees heavenly things and masters earthly things. So seeing heavenly things is right there in Titus, in Timothy, that would be chapter 3 and verse 3, and 3 and verse 9 for the deacon. And the mastering earthly things is all of the other stuff that you see in there, like self-controlled, not a drunkard, right? Not a drunkard, not given over to wine, not a lover of money, you know, mastering earthly things. The same is true of what I mistakenly said a minute ago about a family. You can summarize that as well. So they possess a faith that sees heavenly things and masters earthly things. I have to move on quickly here. The fourth one is, they're men of godly character. We'll talk about this in the list. Five, they are family men whose homes are well ordered under Christ. That's my summary of the different qualifications for elders and deacons that you see on the next page. They're just family men whose homes are well ordered under Christ. The family is They're godly family men. And number six is related to that. They are men with godly marriages with supportive wives. So here are the shared elements. All of these things are true of both offices, and as I said, they're also true of Christians in a very real way, but not necessarily, you know, at the same level. They are required of all, but these are things that we all aspire to do. So any questions or observations about it at this point, up to this point, about the shared elements or what I call teamwork when you think of elders and deacons working together? Yes?
Just when you're talking about men with wives, deacons and elders all have to be married?
Well, some hold that position, but I don't personally hold that position. I think it would be difficult to support that. So, won't get into all the details of that, but no. All right. So let's talk about the roles of elders and deacons in the New Testament. And this is just a summary presentation, because I do want to leave time for questions and discussion. But the roles of elders and deacons in the New Testament. Now, here's where we get specific. So up till now, it's been general. So first thing I want to mention is, and I think this is an important principle to keep in mind, that Christ is the model elder and the model deacon. That Christ was an elder and a deacon all rolled up in one. So that there are parts of his work that would relate more to what we would call an elder's work, and there are other aspects of his work and ministry that would relate to diaconal work. So he's the example for both. So the actual work is the first time you see an actual separation or delineation is in Acts chapter 6 and verse 4. In the New Testament, in the apostolic revelation, or in the apostolic history, this is the very first time, and it's very significant, that you see a distinction being made. And in Acts chapter 6 and verse 4, the apostles said, after urging them or directing them to select seven men of good reputation with the requirements, "We will devote ourselves to prayer and to the ministry of the word." So here's your first distinction in the work. Now, they're not actually called deacons here, but we do believe, and I think with good reason, that this is the establishment of the diaconate in the New Testament church. And the distinction in the work is that the apostles now are to devote themselves to the ministry of the word and prayer. Not exclusively. They're still servants. Elders are still servants. Serve the people. But in this very big way, they're not to be distracted from the ministry of the word and prayer, and then these men, whom we call deacons, are to take care of this particular problem, which is an example of the type of things that deacons do. Service, benevolence, care for widows, care for those who are in need. And the New Testament, then, the history of the church shows how that develops, you know, fans out into many, many areas of service. Now, when you come to specific passages, these are all supported in these passages. For example, the work of elders. In Acts chapter 20 and verse 28, Paul's address to the Ephesian elders speaks about the distinctive aspects of the eldership in terms of shepherding. Shepherd the flock of God which he has purchased with the blood of his own son. So you have the introduction of a term and a concept there that is underscored in the New Testament in what we would call a family of words. A family of words for elders. The first, of course, is elder. And it would almost seem to imply that a pastor has to be older. Gray-haired, but that would be unrealistic, and that would be reading too much into the term. So the word elder would really refer more to experience or a level of maturity. I mean, you have specific examples in the New Testament church of God using younger men. This is a problem because oftentimes in churches, Christians are hesitant to recognize men to eldership if they're like in their 20s or in their 30s. So you have to take it on a case by case, but and of course the most extreme case is like Charles Spurgeon, 19 years of age, becoming a pastor. So I think you get the idea and the sense of this, the difficulty here, the word elder. If it doesn't require chronological age, or like we would say elder kind of equals older, so we all have our definition of older. But, 20 doesn't fit into that definition, or 30 may not fit into that definition. But we would say more like age, level of maturity is what it's talking about there. So you have elder, you have shepherd, which is the word pastor. Our English word pastor comes from shepherd. It's kind of the idea of the pastoral scene, the shepherding. We use the word pastoral, meaning shepherding, overseer, bishop, manager, governor, a whole family of words that actually describe the work of eldership. In the qualifications, on the back of the page, you have rule, or you have management, rule, care, but yet manager is also applied to deacons as well. But the key requirement for elder in this regard is 1 Timothy 3:5, able to take care of the church of God. So there you have the shepherding aspect. And of course, the able to teach up above, 1 Timothy 3 and verse 2 would also go with that, because the care is through teaching. Now, there is another place where a distinction is made, which is really important, and I know you're aware of it. It's 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 17. That within the eldership, there is another distinction that Paul makes here. First Timothy 5:17, where Paul says, the elders who rule well are to be considered worthy of double honor, especially those who work hard at preaching and teaching. The elders who rule well are to be considered worthy of double honor. Notice the word especially. There's your important term that signals that there's a distinction here. So you have elders who rule well, and elders who rule well and work hard at preaching and teaching. So we can talk about that later, perhaps, but something to think about. Let that sink in. But there is a distinction here. And then, with regard to the work of deacons, Acts chapter 6 is a passage, an important passage that informs us about the distinction in the work. 2 Corinthians 8, verses 18 through 22, let's turn to that for a minute, is another passage, although the person that's being referred to here is not described as a deacon. It's not an unfair assumption that it's referring to someone like that, or it is referring to that person, to a person who could be a deacon. It certainly fits within the realm of what a deacon would do. We have sent along with him, 2 Corinthians 8:18, we have sent along with him the brother whose fame in the things of the gospel has spread through all the churches. And not only this, but he has also been appointed by the churches to travel with us in this gracious work, which is being administered by us for the glory of the Lord, and to show our readiness, taking precaution, so that no one will discredit us in our administration of this generous gift. For we have regard for what is honorable, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. We have sent with them our brother, whom we have often tested and found diligent in many things, but now even more diligent because of his great confidence in you. The reference to the testing and the finding diligent is, I think, a very strong hint or suggestion that it may be a diaconal type of work, or actually a diaconal person, a deacon. Okay, Just a few thoughts then on the roles of elders and deacons in the New Testament. Now let's turn over to the qualifications. Now, the problem here of making a list like this is that it depends on what version you use. So you may see something listed there and say, I don't see that in my Bible. It's because it's a different translation of the word and a different version. So it complicates matters. So this is a New American Standard version list for the most part. Although in a few cases, and I don't know if I can tell you which ones they are, right, you know, that quickly, but where I thought a different translation was better, I would put that in here. So you just have to think of, work on this a little bit, but it follows the verses as they flow in the passage. And the 1 Timothy 3 passage is, of course, the main one. But there are other passages. There's another passage, I should say. There are a couple of other passages. The first one is that we want to take notice of is Acts chapter 6 and verse 3, which, if we believe, or if we can prove, and I think you can, that that's referring to the diaconal office, then there are four qualifications listed there, which should be factored in here. So you should put at the top of the right-hand side, Acts 6, verse 3, where you have four qualifications. Good reputation. The apostle said he must be of good reputation, full of the Spirit. That would be the second. And wisdom, that would be the third, although they could go together. And I actually think they do go together. And then the words that we may put in charge of this task, you could actually translate it into a requirement, and that is management. So management, the word manager is found in the list with reference to children. 1 Timothy 3:12, he must be a manager of his own children and household, so that he can manage in the church as God's household. So the idea of management in Acts chapter 6 refers also to judgment and discernment, because the widows were fighting. There was bickering, there was arguing, as there often is at a table where food is involved, and you know, as far as the level of service and complaints about that. So the deacons, these men, have to make decisions, so they need to be wise in dealing with people. They're not just glorified waiters or table servers. They're not just glorified servers. They're actually ministering to people and helping people get along. Turn over to Isaiah chapter 11, a passage we'll look at in the morning service here. Isaiah chapter 11, verses 1 through 4 is the classic passage about the Spirit's endowment in the life of the Messiah, but also in the life of the Christian, and I think here in the life of the deacon. Isaiah chapter 11. Then a shoot will spring from the stem of Jesse, and a branch from his roots will bear fruit. The Spirit of the Lord will rest on him. Now here is what is often described as the sevenfold Spirit. The Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and strength, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. And then he will delight in the fear of the Lord, and he will not judge by what his eyes see, nor make a decision by what his ears hear. But with righteousness he will judge the poor and decide with fairness for the afflicted of the earth. And then the passage changes into a more eschatological, you know, striking the earth with the rod of his mouth. Big, big separation there. But notice, this passage actually applies to the qualifications in Acts chapter 6 for the deacon. Which is interesting, isn't it? And the other passage, which we'll talk about near the end, is the 1 Peter 5, but I'll reserve that for the end of the list. So, you know, in 5 or 10 minutes here, all I really want to do is, you know, just help you. I think what I do with a list like this is I mark it up. You know, I try to put yellow markings and circles and things to try to highlight things and see the connection between things. So, like, if something is really higher on the list, I'll put a circle around it or some kind of notation. So like for the elder, you have two things like that which you should highlight or put an asterisk or something, which I've already mentioned. Chapter 3 and verse 2, able to teach or apt to teach and able to take care of the church of God. So here are the two major the two portions which express the major difference in the two offices. I've been stressing, you know, all the similarities, but there is a difference. And maybe you've asked the question, you know, what's the real difference between an elder and a deacon? Well, that's the real difference. And it fits with the terminology that is used, the different family of words. Able to teach or apt to teach, that also fits with the 1 Timothy 5:17 passage, which I quoted earlier, which was a distinction within the office, so that the elders who rule well are worthy of double honor, especially those who labor at preaching and teaching. But of course, the elders who rule well have to be apt to teach. So there's a difference between a man's ability to communicate the scripture, let's say on a casual or informal level of counseling or just helping people with their struggles, than a man standing up and teaching or preaching in a public setting, something like that. And that also fits with the Acts 6, verse 4, we will devote ourselves to the ministry of the word, or prayer and the ministry of the word. So the ministry of the word, that goes with apt to teach. So apt to teach, 3:2, goes with Acts chapter 6 and verse 4. It goes with 1 Timothy 5:17. And also 2 Timothy 4:2, preach the word, be instant in season and out of season. Notice the one after that on the elder list, holding forth the word to exhort and refute, Titus 1:9, is very similar to the diaconal requirement across the way, where I just have a dotted line connecting them, holding the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience, 1 Timothy 3 and verse 9, which shows that a deacon isn't just, as we said earlier, you know, a glorified table waiter, or just a servant in things, in physical needs, but he's a man of faith. As I said earlier, a man who has a lively faith that sees heavenly things and masters earthly things. And then back to the elders on the left side, the able to teach or apt to teach, and then the able to take care of the church of God. That's a specific shepherding terminology, which is not quite the same on the right side, although deacons have the same care, in that sense, care. But it's not the official care. It's not the official charging of the care of the church in every respect. So then you have, okay, back up to the top, you have this at the very top, above reproach or beyond reproach or blameless, which is true of both men. And there's absolute similarity, consistency, both are at the same level. There's no difference at all in these two. They both have that same requirement, above reproach. And the one under it, a one-woman man. This requirement does not say anything about divorce. It doesn't even, if Paul wanted to say, bring up the issue of divorce, I believe he would have said it. And so all the discussions and debates about that, I think, are really unwarranted. It's just talking about a man's fidelity, his faithfulness to his wife. And that's it. A one-woman man. One woman in his heart, mind, affections, and in every way. Okay, then you have the third major area, which is the big block on the left side, manager of his household, keeping children under control with dignity, faithful, not rebellious children, Titus 1:6, and so on. You have that big block, which I mentioned earlier. On the right side, it's stated in not as many words, but it's the same idea. It's the same idea. You could say, well, Paul just didn't repeat himself, and that could be, but it's the same idea. It's not like an elder has more qualification than a deacon in those areas, family and children, or family and marriage. They're exactly the same. On the right side, which I didn't include the verse and probably should have, the 1 Timothy 3 and verse 11, where Paul says, likewise, wives, 1 Timothy 3:11, women likewise must be dignified, not malicious gossips, but temperate, faithful in all things. I mean, I take the position there that is not referring to the office of a deaconess, and I think the best and clearest and most simple and most the plainest interpretation there, he's just referring to the wives of deacons. You say, well, how come it doesn't say anything about the wives of elders? Well, it's implied. It's just implied because the lists have a back and forth connection to them, as I stated. And then you have all of the qualifications. Loving what is good on the left side, sober-minded, sensible, just, righteous, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable. I mean, isn't it obvious that those things apply to deacons as well? They're just not mentioned over again. If you go back to the Acts 6 list, good reputation, full of the Spirit wisdom, a man that you can put in charge of a task like that, involving people, and hot tempers and all the rest, it's obvious that those things apply in both. Not a drunkard both, not a bully, not quick-tempered, not a fighter, not a striker. Would you want a deacon who was a bully, who was quick-tempered, and who was a fighter or a striker? No, I don't think so. So sure, it's required of both, gentle, peaceable. These are just fruits of the Spirit, the Beatitudes, you know. Blessed are the peacemakers, required of every Christian, required of deacons, required of elders. Not a lover of money goes for both. And 1 Peter 5:2 also applies there, not fond of sordid gain, as the New American Standard says. On the left side, as you come down to the bottom of the list, you have not a new convert. Those two verses, verses 6 and 7, I have danger noted because Paul talks about a warning. He says, not a new convert, so that he will not become conceited. And then in verse 7, a good reputation from the outside, so that. So the so that represents the warnings. Another thing that you could put on the left side, which comes from the 1 Peter 5 passage, is teamwork or parity, because Paul talks about fellow elders. So in that passage, Peter is referring to the concept of, you know, what you have in the Gospels, the two by two. He sends them out two by two. That it's really not good to be only one. There should be two. There should be a pair or more. 1 Peter 5 and verse 3. Prove to be examples of the flock, so you could say an elder has to be exemplary, but so that's true of the deacon also. I would say that fits with the first be tested on the deacon side, first be tested. On the left side, it's implied that you would obviously test someone for the eldership, but you would also, that would fit in with 1 Peter 3 and verse 11, examples to the flock. And there's a great promise attached to being a deacon in 1 Timothy 3 and verse 13. You say, well, how come there's no promise attached to elder? Again, these are not like wooden plastic lists, you know, where Paul says, well, I'm going to, you know, look for balance when I'm finished. You know, like when you look at a piece of literature or writing, you say, well, it has to be balanced. You know, well, Paul didn't always look at it that way, because he just assumed that you would be able to make the connections and fill in the white spaces. But in 1 Peter 5 and verse 4, it talks about the same thing, the promise for elders, that when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown, the unfading crown of glory. So it's the same thing. It's just found in a different place. So let me just summarize this, and perhaps we'll have a few minutes for some discussion. But let me summarize this, that in terms of churches like ours, what you do here at Emmanuel, what we do back at Covenant, I have four thoughts. The first is the idea of testing or provenness. Obviously, that when we proceed with selecting elders or deacons, that's a big issue. Testing or provenness. What do you do if you call someone from the outside? That's the problem with that. You know, how do you test someone from the outside? How does someone prove himself if he's coming from the outside? Okay, so you look for a pastor and you're looking on the outside. Well, how do you do that? Any ideas?
Mike would be very experienced in the problem.
No. Excuse me. No, the question is very specific. If you're calling someone from the outside, how would you be able to prove that person?
You would look for very experienced people that foundation for these men that they are faithful men of God.
You do have to rely upon, you know, the church at large and get some recommendation from that other sources. Yeah, really important. Yeah. So, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but just want to. And so then the second thing is really important too, is realistic expectation. Realistic expectation on the part of all of us as church members. So that would include me, you know, as a pastor in our church, looking for other elders in our church or deacons in our church. I have to do the same thing that you have to do. I have to be realistic about this. It's very easy to take this list and be perfectionistic about it. So that's something you really have to be careful of. You know, looking for the perfect man, the perfect situation. So realistic expectation is really critical here. And there, a level of self-control is involved in this, and trust in God, that you may not be able to have, you know, all of your questions answered or all of your concerns alleviated, this type of thing. So there's a real balance here. Providence is a third factor. Providential circumstances of a particular church. So I can just give you an example of our own situation. Okay, over the years that I've been in our church, I've had a fellow elder twice, once for 2 years, once for 7 years. I wish it were different from that. I wish it had been more years, and I wish a lot of things about that. But it's God's providence, and I accept it. Now, I'm by myself, so I look out at our church, I look at the men in our church, and I just recently in our church approached one of the men of our church who's retired. He's 70 or 71, full of energy, full of life, a great servant in the church. He has a nursing home ministry, which he started. He wanted, before he even became a member, he was out there beating down nursing home doors. So that's the kind of person he is. Over the three years he's been with us, I've given him opportunities to preach, and he's improved in his preaching. I've observed him in his care for people, spending time with people, visitors, sitting with them sometimes for 30, 40 minutes. And so 3 months ago, I had spoken to a number of people in the church, my wife and a few other discerning people, and asked about it, and they were very positive. So I approached him about it. He has no training. He has no formal training. And this is what I'm referring to, providential circumstances. That in our particular church, that man could be a tremendous blessing and support of the work and a helper to me. So that if you looked at this really strictly, you could miss the possibility of having a man like that bless your congregation in that particular congregation. You know what I mean? That, follow me. Okay. Now, as it turns out, after 2 months, he declined. And I can understand why. I do perfectly understand. Thankfully, he said that he would be willing to revisit a former request that I made a year before that he be a deacon, and he said no to that. So I've learned a little principle here, that if you want to scare a person into becoming if you want to have a person be a deacon, you scare him with the office of elder. And when he says no to that... No. Scratch that. But it's just funny. A funny little thing. He said, oh, but I'll be willing to. And the reason for that is he just wants to help, and he knows I really need the help. So anyway, that's experience. That's our own experience, and just one example of experience. And you have to translate that into your own church. I say providential circumstances in a particular church. And the fourth thing is counsel from the outside if needed. This, of course, is necessary in church life on many levels. So my recommendation to you, and I'm going to close with this and we can discuss things. My recommendation to you, and I feel like I can make this recommendation, I don't feel like a stranger here. You know me for the last few years, and I know you pretty well. So I don't have a problem making these recommendations to you right now. I care about you, and I love Pastor Bob and miss him very much, and you know, he's a dear brother and friend. So I have, my heart is for your church and for its future, and I know that's how he would feel about this as well. He would, right? The well-being of this church going into the future, and I think, you know, he would be concerned about what you do now to try to build this church for future usefulness and the care of God's people. So in light of all of that, I would encourage you to look out among you, using the language of the Acts 6 for deacons, I would encourage you to look out among you for one or two men whom could be called to the eldership, who could establish a multiple eldership in this church in light of your desire to call a man, you know, a full-time person in the future. I think in terms of building, establishing and building a foundation of the church, I think that would be safer for you to have an established eldership here of, you know, non-full-time before you call a man to the office, so that that man could then work with the existing, and I think overall it would be better and safer and all the rest. And then secondly, I just want to say, be realistic and not unduly cautious or hesitating. Be realistic about this and not unduly cautious or hesitating about it. So we have only 3 minutes. Any questions? A little longer, but still have a few minutes.